you have your Bibles with you today, I invite you to turn with me to Isaiah chapter 9. We've been spending the last few weeks together and a couple more weeks after this looking at some of the early prophecies of Isaiah that point us onward 700 years to that great story of Christmas. We've called the series A Thrill of Hope because that's really what Christmas is all about, isn't it? You know, it's one of my favorite lines in the Christmas carols where we sing A Thrill of Hope, the weary world rejoices, because we know what it is to live in a weary world and to experience the weariness of this world. But there's something about Christmas time that draws us back again to that thrill of hope. And it reminds me of Mary's exchange with the angel Gabriel when he tells her that you're going to be with child, and she says, well, how can this be? And Gabriel says to her that with man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. And that really encapsulates, I think, so well the message of Christmas, that it is about the impossible becoming possible because God would come to us. And that's what we celebrate together today in Isaiah chapter 9, beginning in verse 1. And it says this, but there will be no gloom for those who were in anguish. In the former time he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the latter time he will make glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as people exult when dividing plunder. For the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the trampling warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there shall be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onward and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God today. Well, the other night, Megan and I were just finally getting a chance to sit down and have some dinner. The girls had an event that night, so we had taken them and dropped them off. And Judah had eaten a little earlier, and so he was satisfied. His dinner was done, and finally we were having a chance to just sit down and have a bite to eat together. And so Judah had some show on the television that he was watching, and we were in the dining room, which is real open right to the living room. So we're all right there, and he's watching his little show, and we're just sitting down, and we start eating and just talking about the day and what's going on, what's the rest of the week look like. And well, Judah kind of interrupts us, and see, some commercial had come on in the midst of his show and caught his attention. It was one of the Christmas Buick commercials. And, you know, it's always funny to me how at Christmas time, how all of these regular advertisers now have these brand new different commercials somehow to make their items seem particularly appealing at Christmas time. And so there's all these special commercials. And I don't know if you've seen the Buick commercial for 2019, but I mean, it's the same message every year. Somehow a Buick is just the right gift for the holidays. It's that thing that you need. Like, this is the difference between a ho-hum Christmas and a great Christmas, is whether or not there's a Buick involved. And so this year is all about their SUV, and it's all about people who've gifted themselves a Buick for Christmas. You know, the U is not just the letter U, but it's Y-O-U. And so there's all these people saying, well, I was on Santa's nice list this year, so I guess I deserve a Buick, or just all these different things. And I don't particularly know what it was about this commercial that caught his attention. It wasn't all that interesting per se as commercials go, but for whatever reason, Judah sees this and he interrupts us and he turns to his mom and he says, "Would you like one of those for Christmas?" And so Megan, who's, you know, trying to capture this moment, and I'm a little oblivious because as soon as he starts talking to her, I'm in the midst of what I'm doing. So she's trying to bring me into this because this is one of those funny moments. And so she says, "Are you asking me if I want a Buick for Christmas?" And of course, now my ears perk up a little bit. And he says, "Yeah." He says, "Dad and I can go buy one. We can use Dad's money and I'll give it to you." I say, "Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely, yeah, no problem. We'll just run down and go pick one up, and that'll be great." I love the way that in the eyes of children, the sky is the limit. You know, they don't bother themselves thinking about, well, how much does it cost, or how are we ever going to afford this, or, you know, they don't think about, is this a practical gift, or is this even a necessity? That's nowhere on their radar. Kids are free to just dream and imagine and to wish and to hope. And boy, do they ever, especially at Christmas time, you know? Through the eyes of a child, Christmas is a time of year when just about anything is possible. It reminded me of a Calvin and Hobbes I've shared with you before. I grew up reading lots and lots of Calvin and Hobbes, and so you'll hear of them every so often. In this particular one, Calvin was coming into the living room where his mom was, and he went to his mom saying, "Mom, would you like to read my list to Santa this year?" And so his mom turns around from what she's doing, and she sees Calvin, who's holding not just a list, but a whole stack of papers, you know, like, you know, one of those, I mean, it looked like he had a whole reel of paper, and she's shocked. She says, "All that?" And Calvin says, "Yeah, I hope I didn't forget to ask for something I want." And so his mom starts flipping through the list of the pages, and she says, "This is alphabetized." And Calvin says, "Yeah, and I cross-index the accessory items that he'll need to get. I try to help out." And so his mom comes back and she's looking at this first page and she says, well wait just a minute. This says volume 1. To which she then adds, "You're going to be one sad little kid on Christmas morning." See, kids, they know how to dream big. They think the sky's the limit. But those of us that have a few more Christmases underneath our belt, we've learned how to temper our expectations a little bit, right? I mean, I don't imagine probably many of us have the expectation and are anticipating a brand new Buick being sitting underneath the Christmas tree come the 25th, you know? I don't imagine that probably there's really all that high of anticipation for a lot of us. I mean, we've lived enough and we've been around long enough to kind of get into the rhythm and the routines of Christmas. We kind of know what to expect long before we ever get here, and so we do the decorating, and we have the parties, and we make the Christmas dinner, and we drink some eggnog, and we sing some carols, and we have some fun, and when we get through Christmas, we put it all in the box for next year to do it again. We've done this enough times that by and large, we just kind of, we know what to expect, and we just think, well, it's easy at least for this just to be another ordinary, every year kind of Christmas. But, you know, it kind of interests me because if we were to go back and try to immerse ourselves in that first Christmas, if we try to put ourselves in the shoes of, you name it, any one of the characters that you would see in a nativity scene or any that you find in the beginning of Matthew or in the beginning of Luke, I don't imagine that for any one of them, any of this was anything expected. I think Christmas, that first Christmas at least, was entirely unexpected. I mean, think about Mary's reaction when an angel just happens to show up and say, oh yeah, by the way, you're the one that God has so chosen in order to carry forth his plan for the Messiah, and you will bear a child, right when she's just been betrothed in marriage to Joseph. I mean, imagine what that experience must have been like for her. No one ever saw that coming. No one would have ever expected that angels would be showing up not in Jerusalem, but outside Jerusalem in the fields and in the byways where the lowly shepherds would be. And that they would show up to them to announce to just shepherds that, oh yeah, the Messiah that your people have long been waiting for, that kings before and religious leaders have long been expecting, anticipating, we're coming to you, lowly shepherds, to tell you that he has come and that you were invited now to come and see him. No one would have ever expected that magi from the east, non-Israelites, people who were far off, who had nothing to do with the anticipation of the Messiah, no one ever expected these guys would be the ones who would receive the sign of the star beckoning and calling them to come and to see. I mean, they show up in Jerusalem in Herod's temple saying, hey, we've come to find the king of the Jews. And here's Herod, the leader of Israel at this time. And well, he's shocked and in awe, afraid for his life that this king showed up under his, on his watch, and he didn't know. And all of Israel, it says, was afraid. No one expected the Messiah to come and for these things to be happening in this way. No one expected the Messiah to be born, this great king, this promised future for Israel was going to show up and was going to be born, not in the city temple, not in the city capital, not in some grand palace, but to be born outside in a manger where animals eat and live. Everything about the story is completely and utterly unexpected. In fact, if that first Christmas is really any indication about what Christmas is supposed to be about, then I would say that the only thing that you can fully expect for sure is that you can never fully know what to expect. And I think that that's where we find ourselves in Isaiah 9:2. Because I think that those original people who were hearing and receiving this message from Isaiah had no idea what to expect and never would have expected the words of promise that Isaiah would come and bring to them. I mean, coming to say that those that are living in the land of darkness, on them light will shine, and on those who are living in anguish, there will be no more gloom. Could you imagine such hopeful words to be spoken? I mean, this word darkness, when it talks about the deep darkness there in verse 2, this is the same word that we read in Psalm 23 when it talks about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. This is talking about a world that is gripped in the darkest of darkness. It's in the bleak darkness. It's in the darkest of places. In other words, this is not the Isaiah is not saying to the people, those that are, you know, kind of outside when the sun's beginning to set and things are starting to get a little bit more difficult to see. You know, when you're trying to finish 18 and you get through 9, but the sun's starting to set and you're trying to get as many holes in as you can before the sun fully goes down, and so you're still hitting and you kind of can see where the ball's headed, but you're not 100% sure any longer. No, he's talking about people that it is so dark. It is like you're out in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night and there's no streetlights around and your cell phone battery is dead and your car battery is dead. You have no light to turn to, nothing to turn on. You are in absolute pitch black darkness. You can't see how many fingers are even right in front of your face if you were to hold up your hand. Kind of darkness. But it's even worse than that, because he's not talking about literal darkness, is he? But he's talking about the darkness that comes over us when we're in a world that is in anguish, right? A world that is in pain, a world that is suffering, when we are living under oppressions and difficulties and stresses and burdens of many kinds. In fact, he talks about the lands of Zebulun and Naphtali, and these were the northernmost tribes of ancient Israel. These were the people who were to the far north of the kingdom of Israel. And the reason why he's talking about the anguish particularly of these cities is because as the northernmost cities, these were the people who, when Israel was under siege, they were the first to receive its attacks. They were the people who were feeling more constantly than anybody else the pressures and the anxieties of all these other nations who were constantly battling over Israel and coming for them and having to fend off against the threats. They were the first line people. They were the first on the line to have to fight the battles and to defend against, living almost constantly under the anguish of battle and of suffering. Finally, facing when the Assyrians would come in and they would lose that northern kingdom in battle to the Assyrians. They knew about this darkness. We know about this darkness, though, don't we? The stresses and the difficulties and life and the way that it just pounds in upon us, and there is no hope of light. And yet, he would say to them, but light has come upon them. It is the whole word is this profound word of hope, that light is shining into the darkness. And that all of that darkness that we have dwelt and lived in and all of the pressures that darkness has brought upon our lives, somehow God is bringing this light to bear upon us so that all that darkness will be washed away and pushed aside so that we can now dwell and live in the light and the promise of the new day that comes because the light has arrived. And just as a few examples of what this light would then bring. Well, he talks about the yoke of our burden has been broken. We have had all of those pressures and all of the oppression that has been laid upon us, the anxiety and stress of it all of that has been ripped or broken into two. No longer is that same weight wrapped around our necks, holding us down, pulling us back, but we've been liberated. We've been set free from the bondage and the oppression of living under such a yoke. He says that the boots and the uniforms for military that we've been having to march in day in and day out that are drenched in blood, fighting battles, trying to fight for our lives. Now those things can be laid aside and be used as fuel for the fire. Because God is doing such a profoundly new thing in the midst of the people of God. Because God is showing up in such a pronounced way that he would even go far to say that this is such a decisive event in time that even somehow time itself is being changed. You see, in verse 1, he talks about in those former days. Those days of darkness and those days of oppression, those days of having to battle, those days of fending for our lives, those have been laid aside for this new day. This day that is a hopeful day. This day that is a peaceful day. This day that is a day filled with promise. All because, hinging on this one thing, for us, a child has been born. Think about that for just a minute. That is a wild statement. Because, I mean, I've been around enough children to know what children are capable of. I've held enough babies, three of my own, to know what they do and what they don't do. And, you know, children, they're pretty amazing in their own right. They do some pretty outstanding things. And the way that they grow and develop, it's miraculous, no doubt about it. But a child to do this, what Isaiah is talking about, all of these promises and this hope, darkness to light, no more gloom or no more anguish, but living with no gloom, all of this to be done away with and the old done and living in this new day, all because simply a child is born. Wow. How can a child do that? Well, it certainly can't be any ordinary child, can it? There has to be something about this particular child. And I think Isaiah says it well when he says, this child will be named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. You see, there's something about this particular child that is like no other child. And this child will be separated and set apart and designated because God is going to use this child in such a magnificent way to do such amazing things that he is going to be like no other child ever before in the history of the world. And God is going to elevate him and raise him up to make him to be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. This kind of king we've never seen before. The king who is going to raise back up this people of God and is going to stand for us and fight for justice and for righteousness, stand for things that are true and right, not things that are for his own gain, but is going to defend our needs and take care of us and watch over us and is going to put the world right with endless peace. And it says, as he finishes with this phrase, he says, and the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. No, maybe. No, the zeal of the Lord will try to do this. We'll see what happens. You know, all those things that, you know, when our kids ask for something for Christmas, we'll say, well, hey, Christmas is coming. You never know. No, the zeal of the Lord of hosts, God's passion for God's creation, God's very heart for God's people, because God so loves the world, God will 100%, absolutely, unequivocally, will do this. That's amazing. It reminds me a lot of the story in A Miracle on 34th Street. Some of you probably remember the film. Susan, she was a skeptical little kid, you remember? She wasn't sure if she wanted to believe in Santa Claus because, well, Santa had let her down enough times. Her home, her life wasn't exactly what she envisioned or hoped life to be. You know, she had this mom that had to work too much, and they lived in the downtown city, and she wanted a house and a picket fence and all of those wonderful things that little kids dream about. And, well, she just was a lot more pragmatic about things because she had hoped and been disappointed enough times that she just kind of was done with the whole Santa Claus thing. And so when Kris Kringle showed up, well, she thought he's just like all the other Santas we've seen before. You know, he's going to come and he's going to, you know, try to offer up these empty promises. But come Christmas morning and beyond, you know, it's not going to pan out. I mean, he can tell me, you know, to hope and to dream and what I really wish for Christmas, but I don't expect those wishes to ever really come true. And so I don't even really want to wish them any longer. But Chris, you know, he just was persistent. You know, he just kept going after her, wanting to know, wanting to re-enliven in her this hope, this wonder, this possibility that Christmas is. And so she just kept saying, no, thank you, no, thank you. And finally, he was able to build enough trust that finally she began to open her heart up. And she said, well, I secretly hold on to this one wish, but it's too big. It's too much. It's that one wish that I know there's just no way that you could ever do or accomplish. And so I don't even bother asking for it anymore because I know that you're going to say you're going to do what you can, but I don't think you can do it. And you're going to be just like all the other Santas who say they're going to try and want me to believe and hope, but in the end, it's not going to happen. And so I don't even want to wish for this one thing that secretly in my heart I still hold out for, wishing and hoping somehow in some way it would come to pass. And he asked her what it is, and it's, if you remember the story, it's she wants to have a house, a big house with a big yard, the whole thing. And he says, I'm going to try and see what I can do. And that's when her face drops a little bit, and she's, okay, we'll see. Fully anticipating and expecting that he's going to be just like everyone else before. But you remember what happens when that wish comes to fruition, don't you? All of a sudden, this little girl, for the first time in a long time, at least as a child, that hope within her is reimagined. And for her, that possibility of what Christmas is was re-enlivened within her. For the first time in a long time, Christmas was about something that was possible again. The hope and the joy and the possibility of what Christmas could be, finally, for the first time in that little girl, she had this hope re-enlivened with her, to where finally it was possible to hope and to dream and to imagine again. And for her, Christmas could never be the same. See, God's done something like that for us, hasn't he? In the gift of a child, who could have guessed it? Who would have ever known that in the gift of a child, somehow God would be doing something to fulfill every one of those hopes and dreams, those things in our hearts that we said, I don't think this is ever going to be possible. I don't think God can work in this place of my life. I don't think it's possible for God to reach me here. Well, I think that the promise of Christmas and what God has done through Christ says, wait and see. Because we need to expect the unexpected, and we never know fully what God might be up to next.